What can I say, dear? After I say I'm sorry.
Welcome to the Bob and Ray Beg Your Pardon Show, and we think we've done it again.
That's right. As serious and responsible reporters of the current scene, we should have been more careful.
See, about 2 weeks ago, we included a shopping tip in one of our radio broadcasts. We said we knew of a place where a person could purchase a deck of Marquette cards.
We thought Marquette was the name of the playing card manufacturer, but it wasn't. The word was mispronounced. It should have been pronounced marked.
That's right. Marked card. So we have some apologizing to do to the gentleman seated here, and we might as well get to it. He bought several decks without realizing they were marked cards, and can you ever forgive us, Mr. Earl? Or is that Carl? Mr. Carl Eubank.
What can I say to you after
I say Carl?
I'm sorry?
Well, it's all right. We all make mistakes.
Well, when was it first realized that the cards were marked? Could you tell us that?
Well, it was at our regular Wednesday night poker game.
Mm-hmm.
This week's game was at my house. I think the discovery was made about 10:15.
By whom, Mr. Eubank?
I think George Hacker was the first to notice.
Yeah.
He was the big loser that night, and he was moaning and groaning about it. Well, I started to deal a hand, and George jumped up and shouted, "These cards are marked!" And all the guys piled on me and started whacking me around.
Well, I guess you know, by the looks on our face, that we're pretty sorry about this, Mr. Eubank. What happened right at that point?
I'll tell you that egg, too, Phil.
Yes.
Well, I got up off the floor, and I was in pretty bad shape. I got off the floor and I said to George, I'm afraid...
No, I'll pull yourself together, yeah, because we do want to apologize publicly and make everything clean slate for you.
I said to George, "These are not marked cards, they're Marquette cards."
Well, what happened then?
He jumped all over me again, and by this time the whole poker group was screaming and the cards were marked.
Yeah, well, that must have been rough, I can imagine.
Well, it sure was. And then I told them once more. The cards were not marked, I said. They were marked dead.
And were you thrown to the floor again, Mr. Eubank,
at
that point?
Not this time. I guess they were tired of pommeling me around. Instead, they went through the house, tearing curtains,
mm-hmm,
knocking over vases, smashing furniture, and they left after they'd done about $2,700 worth of damage.
Well, that certainly was more than you'd bargained for. What did you do then, Mr. Eubank?
Well, I thought there had to be some reason for their acting the way they did, so I took a good look at the cards.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, they were marked.
Could you tell us just how they were marked, so we'll know?
Well, there was a house on the back of each card, but on some of the houses, the door was open, and on others, the door was shut.
Mm-hmm.
Some houses had smoke coming out of the chimney and others didn't. As a matter of fact, some of the houses didn't have chimneys at all.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was this pathway leading to the house. And on some of the trees...
Well, I think we understand how that could work. What did you do when you made this discovery, Mr. Eubank?
Well, Mr. Elliott, I'm not a dishonest man, so I got on the phone and I called George Hacker. I told him he'd been right. The cards were marked.
Well, good. I guess that straightened things out, didn't it?
No. Well, after I admitted to him on the phone that the cards were marked, he rounded up the gang and they all came back to my house. They did about another $1,200 worth of additional damage.
You certainly had a real bad time of it, Mr. Eubank. No doubt of that. And I'd just like to tell you how really miserable we feel about all that's happened. I don't know how we could have made a mistake like that. And for your appearance on the show today, we'd like you to have a little gift, a deck of Marquette playing cards. He was. Ow. You didn't need to do that, Mr. Eubank. Just trying to be nice to you.
He just had the bob. He had to get it out of his system, I guess.
Friends, we've really done it this time.
Oh, boy, I'm telling you, the walls of the Bob and Ray Overstock warehouse are banked with sets of books, all the way to the ceiling and back again.
Row upon row upon countless row of magnificent sets of the Encyclopedic Book of Wonder. 40 volumes to the set.
That's right, friends. Approximately 140 pounds of illuminating, exciting, thought-provoking facts.
And each book is covered in genuine pigskin from pigs selected at birth and nurtured along on the finest flops available.
The color of the covers, a deep, rich maroon.
Which is about the color we turned when we checked the publication date of these books.
December 3rd, 1899.
Now, naturally, at first, we thought we'd been taken by the people who'd sold us these handsome sets.
But after the first flash of white-hot rage, we decided not to prosecute, sue, or otherwise badger the individuals with whom we'd made our deal.
Their loss is our gain.
Friends, we're going to tell you what a set of the 1899 Encyclopedic Book of Wonder can do for you.
Well, as I lead through a sample copy here, it comes as no small thrill to rediscover the fact that the planet Earth has an atmosphere. Now, this same thrill is available to you.
Bring this piece of information on your friends. There are 12 gas stations in the United States. New York State is the leader with 2.
Or regale your friends with this tidbit from the Encyclopedic Book of Wonder, an excerpt from the literary section, which says, quote, Mark Twain is going places.
And it's quite possible that some of you might want to know the correct procedure for dumping sandbags from a balloon. You'll find it in one of these volumes.
That plus 1.5 million other pieces of dated but useful knowledge.
Now, there are those of you who want to get rid of the extraneous matter in the books, the pages, so you can do things with the genuine pigskin covers.
Now, with 40 pigskin covers, you can fashion a 20-foot-high briefcase.
Boating enthusiasts, attention, please. Be the first member of your yacht club with a maroon pigskin sail, a real eye-catcher.
And if you choose to leave the pages in the books, you'll find they make dandy doorstops, handy ammunition to throw at cats.
And if all the members of the family ripple the pages at once, an extraordinarily inexpensive air conditioning unit will be introduced into your home.
Yes, friends, these are but some of the many benefits to be derived from these priceless volumes.
All at a cost so precariously low that if it were mentioned, it would send the market into a flurry of selling, perhaps force it to close early.
Well, you can keep the crate they come in, too. It can be used as a handy container for your set of the 1899 Encyclopedic Book of Wonder.
Now, for more information, drop a postcard tonight to Hidebound, CBS Radio, 485 Madison Avenue, New York City.
And we'll get it.
Good.
Just you bet on that.
Bob, we have a thrilling new Private Eye series. I think tonight will be the first and last installment, according to the advanced previews I've heard of it. And it's called Johnny Crescendo. My name is Johnny Crescendo. If you don't like it, tough. That's my name, and I like it, and I fight to keep its good name, too. I like to hang out at a place in the village called Chico. I don't own it or nothing, but it's kind of a nice, warm place. Chico ain't a bad sort, and lets you run off the tab of a few bills. My occupation, sitting at a piano stool, noodling around, playing some real cool chords. Occasionally, I like to work out for $100 a day, plus expenses, tracking down some things. It was a wet night about 3 months ago. I was sitting at the piano. This creepy-looking figure came in the door and moseyed over towards me. I figured I had a real live one coming along and...
You Crescendo?
Yeah.
Mind if I sit down?
Not on that stool, buddy. If you want to talk to me, stand off.
I want to talk business with you, Crescendo.
Wait just a second. I want to get a couple of cool ones.
Always do as bad business as this in here.
Chico ain't in this for money, buddy. Now, what do you want to see me for?
Well, let me tell you my story and see if you can help me. I don't know whether you can or not.
Hey, wait a second. Spin around.
Yeah.
As I thought.
What?
Somebody pasted a kick me sticker on the back of your coat.
Oh, would you mind taking it off?
I'm an idiot, are you, anyway?
I wondered why folks have been kicking me all
the time. Here, I'll take it off.
Must have put that on in the parking lot. See, I went to pick up my car about an hour ago, and I discovered the hood ornament was missing.
Yep.
2 of the hubcaps gone.
Right.
Well, will you take the case?
What do you want me to do?
I want you to find him, Crescendo.
Well, where were you parked?
Over in the parking lot on 12th and Main.
You know, I come fairly expensive. 100 fish a day plus expenses.
100 fish a day? You're kidding.
You laughing at me or my piano, buddy? Either way, you're going to get a fat lip.
Well, I guess you know $100 a day to find a hood ornament and two hubcaps is pretty steep.
Well,
go ahead. Go play some more. Don't mind me.
No, I was going to say...
Let's talk this thing over.
Well, I was going to say, how about $90?
Oh, come on, Christian.
Expenses,
this job, you ought to be able to work this out in...
Why?
2 or 3 hours' time.
I think I know who did it. The kid in here a few hours ago, nervous type, looked like a fellow would grab a hood on him.
That's so? Did he have anything with him that looked suspicious?
He had a, kind of a hood ornament on his jacket.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought it looked like something that would come from a car.
Shaped like a big bird?
Yeah. Yeah. I can put my hands on that right away.
How about hubcaps? Did he have any of them with him?
I couldn't see that. How about, $30?
Oh, come on. If you said something like 5 or 10, I would... Hey, is that the kid over there? The one with the...
I'm not saying till you give me my $2.
Oh, wait just a second, Crescendo. Hey, kid. Where'd you get that hood ornament?
The way it goes for me, all the time. I'll be back again next week. Don't you miss it.
We want to take up a rather serious problem that's come to our attention, and we have gone to some effort to present a well-rounded picture of this problem. We hadn't realized just how great it was until the facts were all across our desk.
Here we are now, then, with the Bob and Ray Report. The Bob and Ray Report. On the Pocket Fuzz Shave.
The shame of pocket fuzz in our nation today is one of the greatest problems we have to face. And to delve into the various aspects of the problem, we've called together our Bob and Ray correspondents and experts in the matter to try and find a solution. First, we're going to the Office of the Citizens Committee Against Pocket Fuzz to hear an interview between Wally Ballou and William H. Fuzzy King, head of the committee. Come in, please, Mr. Ballou. Is Wally Ballou at the offices of the CCAPF? And I'm sitting across the desk of Mr. William H. Fuzzy King. Should I call you Mr. King or Fuzzy?
Mr. Ballou, I would prefer you call me Mr. King. I think if you called me Fuzzy throughout the interview, people may not place as much
credence or
importance to my job.
Well, as I go into the 24th year of my newscasting and special events career, I sense that I have stumbled on something that is one of the biggest stories of that 24-year period, and I wonder if you could pinpoint it for me.
Yes, well, I have been with the committee since it was founded 7 months ago. And after all these weeks of informing and educating the public as to not only the danger of pocket fuzz from a physical standpoint, but also from a cleanly, sanitary standpoint.
Yes.
I reached into my pocket this morning and found just some shredded tobacco, I believe it was a clove type of candy, small little piece, and some fuzz.
Together with fuzz from the inside of your very pocket there.
So you can see that the problem is bigger than you would think. If through this broadcast we can alert the public to cleaning out their pockets more or more frequently, I think we will have served a great purpose.
I think we all understand that, Mr. King. What is the primary danger in this amount of pocket fuzz being around in pockets throughout the country?
Well, the principal danger is this. What we want to do is have the people empty their pockets in sections. There's a danger that everyone will get the idea to empty their pocket fuzz at the same time. And then the country is in a serious problem.
Throw us out of
what we want to do is have the Northeast do it Monday through Wednesday. And then the Southeast maybe Thursday through Friday.
Right.
And then take the weekend off.
Well,
and then go out the West Coast again, Monday through Wednesday. You see, so as to balance the fuzz.
Well, I think that that is a very constructive idea, but to find out just what the average man is doing about the problem, let me call in my broadcasting partner, Artie Skirmahorn, in the street below as he chats with passersby. Come in, Artie, please.
Hello, everybody. This is Artie Skirmahorn. Here is part of the Bob and Ray report on pocket fuzz. Sir?
Yes?
I wonder if you could speak into our microphone and give us your impressions of the fuzz problem.
I had been unacquainted with it until I heard the announcements on the radio about it and saw the big posters going up on the street corners and on the delivery trucks.
Yes, that poster, I might point out, shows a man emptying his pocket saying, "Have you done it?"
Right. Well, immediately after I read that, I began to think about the problem.
Yes, I wonder, just for the sake of describing the problems, would you empty your right coat pocket now? Let's see how much fuzz you have accumulated there.
All right. Here's good.
As he's doing that, I might point out that the fuzz is being gathered now at various points in the northeast of Newport, Rhode Island. It's baled this pocket fuzz, and it's taken to sea and dumped. All right, sir, now what's the...
Well, there's a good half a handful right
Look, here. I'm getting a signal report to hurry up, so would you speed along?
Well, I'm going to empty this pocket, and then when I get home, I'll empty the other ones.
We must go now to Fentress Simon, who's at Capital City, talking with the governor.
This is Fentress Sinum in the office of the governor at Central City. Governor, what is the state doing to meet this problem?
I have today authorized the Attorney General to check on Fuzzy King.
He is the head of the Citizens Committee against
Fuzzy King. Only thing that's being perpetrated by Fuzzy King for what reasons we do not know.
Do you tie this problem or this question he has raised, do you tie it in with this being a political year in any respect?
I wouldn't want to comment one way or the other on that. Right now, I'm interested in seeing if this fellow's up to no good and if he is, to put him where he belongs.
In other words, your first job will be an investigation of Mr. Fuzzy King.
First thing I'm going to do, and then I want to check on Bob and Ray.
Thank you, Governor. And now this is Fentress Sinum and Capital City returning it to New York.
And so you have heard the Bob and Ray report on the pocket fuzz shame. The city.
Green Pickerel, the story of Paul Chevalier, a 17th century hero. As usual, France was in a state of upheaval when Chevalier, flop, charlatan, or whatever he was, heeded the call of his people.
Chevalier, I beg of you, do not make this journey. It is a fool's errand.
Freedom, Raoul Martignac, is not to be held so lightly that it should not weigh heavily on one's mind. No, Raoul Martignac, I must go to the tavern of the two intertwining roads to see what I can learn.
The tavern is filled with the minister's secret police. No place for the green pickerel. It will mean your neck, your cart, Paul.
The guillotine holds no fears for me, Raoul Martignac. It has already been used on me several times. I must go now. Goodbye, Raoul Martignac.
Good fortune, magnificent fool.
Monsieur, you do not drink your wine. A slight indisposition, perhaps?
What name do you go by, girl of the bar?
I am the famous Marie. Everyone knows me. I will sit in your lap, no?
Marie, a lovely name. And your face, it is the face of justice. Am I not correct in this, Marie?
I do not understand, monsieur. You speak in riddles.
And it is dangerous to speak in riddles in a tavern filled with the minister of secret police, no?
Monsieur, I have much to do.
A moment, Marie. You say you have much to do. I must ask you, the much you have to do, is it in the name of the people?
I cannot say, monsieur. I do not even know who you are, and it is dangerous to speak with strangers.
I am no stranger, Marie.
Who are you, monsieur?
You have but to feel the collar of my shirt to know who I am.
Why, it's a silken shirt. Then you must be...
Quiet, Mary. We have enemies here. Yes, I am Paul Chevalier the Green Pickle, at your service. I need information, Mary. Do we understand one another?
Perfectly, monsieur. Attention! Attention, Minister of Secret Police! This talk here is none other than Paul Chevalier the Green Pickle.
You will pay for this, Mary.
What's the exit?
Well, come on, Minister of Secret Police. Take me, if you can.
Chevalier, you want number 20 to 1. Come on.
19 to 1, my fallen friend.
Hey, go up the stairs.
Here, go ahead, friend.
Go on and kick the first man down the stairs, or he'll fall on the rest of us.
Wait a minute. On the chair.
Hurry, jump through the window. His horse waits below.
Adios.
Oh, wow.
I, Raoul Martignac. I was worried, so I followed. But why are you lying on the ground?
Raoul Martignac, I left my horse here when I entered the tavern. Have you seen him?
Yes, from Green Pickerel. He seemed restless, so I took him yonder to graze.
Fool!
The Green Pickerel. Fox, charlatan, or fighter for liberty. Wally Ballou is at International Airport out in Long Island, where he's about to interview somebody live and on tape. So come in, please. Wally Ballou. Wait a minute. Engineer's nodding.
What's the matter? He
hasn't made contact with him yet.
Well, it's only out to idle while. It's what?
I don't care where he is. You have to have contact. Well, there they are. Go ahead.
Dubs like that, what do you expect? Oh, this is radio's Wally Ballou. A greeting you from the airport where arrivals of transoceanic airplanes are a commonplace thing. One has just arrived now, and I want to chat with a couple of the passengers. A lady, a very attractive lady, has caught my eye over here to the outer rim of the crowd. Ma'am?
Yes?
I wonder if you've just landed here from overseas.
That's right. I just arrived... From Amsterdam, I have hidden about my person $4 million worth of diamonds.
I see. Then you are a professional smuggler, is that...
That's right. I get a percentage of the amount I take in.
I've always wondered about the cute ways in which smugglers manage to bring in a contraband material like that. Could you tell us?
Oh, there are many ways. For instance, on this trip, I'm using hollow shoe heels, and I have a drop-away bottom in the bag.
Uh-huh.
And this is a fake nose I got.
And,
loaded with diamonds.
Is that
if right? If I could sneeze on you like that song says, you'd be a millionaire.
Yes, sir. Well, it's rather difficult, of course, to go into a line of work like this. You must have had to spend quite a while making contact, both in foreign countries and here at home.
Yes, on both sides. I have to establish contacts. It's something that you can't go to school to learn. It's only through experience. You have to be able to, get wind of a copper almost instinctively. There's a lot to learn, but there's a good deal of satisfaction. In
I should imagine.
You can sit at home at night knowing that you've done a job well.
Done a job well.
Yes.
Have you ever had any close calls at any times when you thought you were going to be arrested?
Well, not this time. I might be caught because my heel caught in one of those gratings over the hot air system.
And
you know, these narrow heels that were worrying me.
Yes.
Well, I got stuck there, and a nice man, a nice customs man, came over and helped me out.
Didn't break the heel or anything.
No.
Luckily for you.
He never noticed at all. Although it took two men, really, to lift my shoe. It's that heavy with diamonds.
I see. It must be kind of difficult to walk.
Didn't notice, yes.
Well, good luck to you, and where will you be going from here? To meet the fence and get rid of everything?
Yes, I go from here by cab to a fence in New York City. Then from there, I go out to San Francisco. From there, I'm going to the Far East to do some more smuggling.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be busy now until my vacation in August.
What's that, engineer? Oh, there are two gentlemen over there are beckoning to you, ma'am. I think they just want to say hello.
Oh, coming.
And there she goes across the lobby here at the airport. And is having quite a serious discussion with the two gentlemen who... I wonder, sir, you are one of the two who is talking with the lady.
Yeah.
I'm Wally Ballou on the radio.
I'd like to have you come along, too, Ballou.
Fine.
And nothing serious. We don't have anything on you.
No.
Just want you to more or less, confirm what we heard on the radio.
Yes.
Okay.
Always glad to do my best.
All right.
And now this is
turn it off, buddy.
Radio's Wally Ballou returning it to our studio.
Another episode of One Fella's Family. Today's episode, entitled Foggy Day at the Seawall, is taken from Book IX, Chapter VI, Page 1. It's mid-morning as we look in on the family. Father and mother are standing looking out the kitchen window. Father saying...
Fanny?
Yes?
Perhaps it would be a good day to take a stroll down by the seawall.
So foggy.
Well, I always like to walk in the fog.
Yes, there's something about the fog that... Mysterious.
Oh. Why don't you slip on your trench coat and we'll walk down the path.
All right, you hold it for me.
Here.
There we are.
Here.
Oh.
All right. Right down this way. It is foggy.
Careful, I can hardly see it.
Careful, there are
front of my face.
Three steps there. Yes. Here we are. Now it's a clear path to the seawall.
Well, step for the fog.
Here.
I often wonder how a sea captain feels out in a deep fog.
I've often wondered how ships can navigate in such fog as this. Wouldn't be good for a little boat to...
Well, they have radar now, you know.
Hear anything?
Certainly no big boat. That boat does not have radar.
I'm on Jack!
This sounds like Jack in his runabout.
Oh, it is. Out in this fog. Oh.
Jack, my boy.
He's gone way out.
What's he doing on a day like this?
Going around in circles, but that's been his life history anyway. Going around in circles since he learned to walk.
Jack?
I'm on a Jack.
Bring your runabout in this moment.
Can't hear you with that motor going, Pa.
No, I guess he can't. Well, perhaps the fog will lift and he'll be able to see where the dock is. I don't like to have him out there, though.
He's been out for how long? Was he in the house last night, or has he been going around all night?
I think he was there this morning, yes.
He should be due back in. Maybe he's coming in now. I hope so. Come in now, Jack. He's coming in.
Oh, Jack.
He's coming in now.
He's landed now.
Yes.
Jack, you'd better get up to the house and get some warm clothes.
That's what happened on a foggy day at the seawall.
Yes,
yes. You've been listening to One Fella's Family, brought to you as a sustaining feature on the Bob and Ray Show. Today's episode, entitled Foggy Day at the Seawall, was taken from Book IX, Chapter VI, page 1. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production.
We have just about 2 minutes now.
I know, Bob. I know what you're going to say. You're going to have the audience with
right.
that. But first, I think you should inform them that when they rise to pose their question, to give their name and possibly their affiliation, if they're with the press association or something like that.
Okay, I'll
right.
do that. Right. Then you step down the steps here from the stage and right to the front row. And this gentleman here, would you give me your name?
Him.
No, I'll pick.
Me, him. Go ahead,
I'm
him.
I'm going to pick him.
Me, him.
This one, this fellow right here. Could I have your name and affiliation, please?
Yes. My name is Alan Bunshaft. I'm with the Finley Quality.
Oh, now, wait. I can't talk to you, sir. We've
I,
been
I'd like to ask this question.
We've had too much of that.
Bothered me quite a while. If you say something on the air that shouldn't be said, can you call the transmitter and have them stop it before it goes up the tower?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the speed of sound, sir, and I don't want to get too technical for you because I don't think you'd follow me.
Well, we at the Fenley Quality Network
well, never mind,
have often wondered
yeah.
about this and
I know
who to talk with.
No, it's a very
the,
simple
head
problem.
Engineer at the Fenley Quality Network told me
yeah.
that he wasn't
well,
really
I'll try
up
to
on
answer
that.
The question for you if you just stop throwing that name in. The speed of sound is quite a bit overrated. If we say something we want to go on the air, we merely pick up this phone here. We call master control in through that window. We say, hey, Joe, will you catch that last thing that went out? And we tell him what it is. I see he has a direct line
all
to the
right,
transmitter.
You've answered him. How about some by
the time?
Before you say it?
All right.
Run out?
Okay. You have one quick question.
Alan Smith of the Finley Quality Network.
Oh, look. What have we got for an audience here?
I would like to ask you this. What's a good way to cook cabbage without having the odor of cabbage bother you?
Well, I don't know. Do you have the answer?
A clothespin over your nose.
Thanks very much. And give our best.
We have that at Finley Quality Network.
Yeah, all right.
All the time.
Well, back on stage now. Pierre Dupre, will you come over and sign in, please? Our old friend from the North Country here with us to pay a visit after some 3 months. After.
Hello there, Bob. I'm Ed there. And you too, Ray.
Pierre, it's wintertime here in the States.
Well, it's wintertime on top of the North Hemisphere there. I was reading the paper where they would have a heat spell there underneath Australia on it.
Yes, well, this is their summertime, of course.
Oh, is that right?
That isn't what we're here to chat about. It's this little item in the newspaper which says Pierre Dupre, log rolling camp, plans to roll a log across the Atlantic Ocean. What is it of this story, Pierre?
Well, it's true on it there, Bob. I was going to get on a log there with my hobnail boozer, and I would keep the log spin until I was arrive at Europe there. I mean, in transit, maybe, or to England on it there.
You mean you're just going
whatever
to...
Whatever country I would come to, I would stop there.
You're just going to keep rolling this log until you hit Europe, huh?
Yes, but my brother will be on a boat there in case I would fall off and drown there in the big ocean there because it's deep.
In the big
I'm used only to fresh water.
Well, that's what I was going to ask
but
you.
But this is salt water. There's a difference here on the buoyancy.
Yeah, well, we have a tank set up for you because I thought you might like to demonstrate for us and for the people in
well,
the studio.
Well, in as much as we're indoors on it there, Bob, I think I'll take off this jacket there and do it just in my shirt sleeve.
All right. There's a big log already in there. I don't know how you're going to get on it.
You would put salt on the water there?
Salt water. Then,
well, it's It will be the first time I was due to call, Walter. I was been doing this good on the phrase there.
Well, I think it's time you began to practice, you know.
Oh, Walter, there is stronger than the phrase.
Climbing over the edge of the tank now.
Well, all right.
One foot on the log, and there he goes.
Music there, I'll throw my ribbon off there. Will you stop the music?
Yeah, stop the music.
Please, that music was throw off my rhythm. I would go left, right there, left, right. I can't do that with rhythm on it.
How long do you think this is going to take you to go across the Atlantic on a log?
Oh, that would take me a week at least. That's a big water.
Well, I know, but you haven't even begun to move around the tank here yet. You're staying in one place.
Oh, that is...
You all right?
I'm wet, man.
Oh, a little flag.
Well, I'm mistaken.
Oh, he has fallen off the log, ladies and gentlemen.
Let me
explain this to you, ladies and gentlemen. In this tank, which is about 8 feet deep, here in our studio, Pierre Dupre, the log rolling champ, has fallen off the log and now is floundering there. Webb, I wonder if you'd pull the plug out of the tank. Might be a little help to him.
Here we are.
If it's not too late, I certainly hope not. We're all wearing brand new suits today.
Yes, sir.
Are you all right?
I'm all right now, but I'm soaking wet there. How am I going to get out of this tank? It's about 15 feet up.
Well, it is bigger than I thought it was. We'll have
rusty,
to
too, you know. It's slippery on it there.
Steady, we'll try to get a ladder for you and get you out before the show is over.
I'm cold like a brass monkey down here.
Yeah. All right. Well, Pierre Dupre, our thanks to you for dropping by today, and good luck on your upcoming trip.
Good luck to me there. Get me out.
Are you still going to try the Atlantic?
I don't know there, not until I get out from inside this tank there.
Well, Webb, can you help him some? We have other work to do here.
I'll do the best I can. I'll drop him down some bouillard.
Well, that would be very helpful of you. Maybe a blanket or something you could give him.
Make it for tea soup.
Tea soup, Webb, make it.
Okay.
On the night of the 13th, that the Speckled Bass, having taken a direct hit from a destroyer, was forced to submerge to the bottom. 48 hours later, and still on the bottom.
That was a little too close for comfort, Skipper. We can't take too many more like that.
Why not?
Well, because we're in pretty bad shape around here, especially the morale of the crew.
Then pass out some chalk. Let them write messages on a few of the torpedoes.
Bring him, mate. Let me out. I'll break out of it.
That man is hysterical. He's got to be slapped.
There he goes, Skipper. Slap him.
I had to do that, Fuller. Maybe someday you'll understand. You see, even the best of us are afraid now and then. It's nothing to be ashamed of. I want you to... Fuller, we're going to forget that you punched me. Now get back to your depth gauge and watch that needle.
See what I mean about the morale of the crew, Skipper?
All right, Lieutenant. Tell the crew I've got something to say to them.
Men, hold it down. The Skipper's got something to say to you.
Men, hear this. The Lieutenant tells me your morale needs a boost. Well, here it is. Szymanski, I want you to break radio silence to send this message to Fleet Headquarters. USS Submarine Speckled Bass, tired of being sitting duck. Intend to surface, engage enemy, and do a little shooting on our own. All right, Fuller. We'll forget that you did it again.
Sir, I think the men were looking for another kind of...
Cancel that last message and send this one instead. USS Submarine Speckled Bass, too proud to be on bottom. Going to top where we belong.
It's a Fuller again, Skipper. Better fend for yourself.
I'll do my best.
Here's a morale message for you, Skipper.
Oh, I gotta get out of here. I can't take it anymore. I don't care about this old stuff. I gotta get out of here.
But
the skipper did care. And once Fuller's hands were tied to his side, the USS submarine Speckled Bass performed a clean sweep.
Saw an interesting thing the other day, and fortunately, we had our wrist tape machine with us.
Why those come in handy, don't
they? Oh, boy, we just turned it on and caught this wonderful thing. It was in a restaurant not too far from Midtown here, so you thread that up. Let's listen to it, shall we?
Yes, sir. How many will you be, please?
Well, just one.
All right, right this way, please. How will this be?
This is fine.
If you will, I'll get you a menu, just.
Thank you very much.
One alone. There you are, sir.
Thank you.
Anytime you're ready, I'll...
Do you have a kitty menu?
What's that, sir?
Do you have a kitty menu?
A kitty menu?
Yes. I like those menus.
Well, this is our regular menu. We have a children's menu,
well,
sir.
Could I look at it, please?
Well, why?
Well, I don't want to eat this. You know, I just children.
You mean you want to order from the children's
menu?
Yes,
I like children's portions, and I like to have my meat cut up for me.
But you're an adult. I mean, this is kind of irregular, you know?
Yes, but it's what I like to. Could I have
it? Don't you feel kind of silly ordering?
Yes, but I wish you wouldn't make so much people look just...
I'll have to ask the manager. I don't know whether we can let you order from that or not.
Ask him if he has turkey lurkey with gravy.
Well, if you wait just a minute.
Because I like that. Sir,
it's Mr. Furphy.
Yes.
That gentleman over at table 25 wants a kitty menu. It's never happened before. I don't know whether I should give it to him or not.
There's probably some whack. Go ahead, give it to him. It's not any trouble.
Yeah. All right, here you are.
Thank you. Oh, boy, let me see here. Humpty Dumpty, egg salad, little Miss Muffet, curds and whey pudding, old Mother Hubbard's boneless chicken.
You're bending the menu, the old woman in the shoe menu there, sir.
That's nice, isn't it?
We think it's rather cute for the
kitchen. Well, I think that's what I'll have. I'll have the turkey lurkey with gravy and Cap'n Fiddle mashed squash.
Turkey lurkey with gravy.
And,
How about winding up with a silver bell and cockle shell salad, sir?
All right. And then for dessert, I think I'll have the curds and whey pudding with a lollipop in it.
All right. I'll be right back.
Thank you very much.
Is that what it takes then, was it?
Right there, yeah.
He was a whack,
It turned out he was crazy. Nashua, New Hampshire, about to take place is the famous February 8th parade, which has been something going on up there on the 8th of February for, I don't know, as old as the Boy Scouts of America, I believe. Bob and the horns here on the floor?
Yes, so I can...
Wally Ballou is up there, and he's going to broadcast what we hope will be the highlight of that parade. Come in, then, please. Wally Ballou.
Sing here on the corner of Maine and Spruce Street. And presenting the famous February 8th parade. Just a few feet from me is my ex-broadcasting partner, Artie Skirbohorn, who's covering the parade for another network. And I hope his voice isn't confusing you both listening too much.
Ballou's voice isn't leaking into our...
Down the street... The first parade group, a group of high school students.
The parade that is coming now, a group of high school students.
Just almost reaching us.
They are just a moment, the please. From us here.
Artie, I wonder if you turn the other way, please. We're picking you up, my engineer tells me. Well, ladies and gentlemen.
We're picking up Wally Ballou on our network.
A very colorfully attired group of high school students.
A nice
to
have had at this point. Carrying a big banner. Many hours, obviously, getting their uniforms ready. They're beautifully attired.
They're carrying a big banner that says February 8th, 1960.
There's a banner that they're holding. is February 8th, 1960.
Tremendous ovation from the crowd.
The crowd here really, really loves
as
it.
As the group.
I call it a tremendous
back.
Ovation they're receiving.
And,
as they go by.
Heidi, we're picking you up again.
Was that engineer?
Now, one of the high spots that we've been waiting for, the famous...
Wally, I'm afraid we're picking you up on our microphone.
Well,
here.
I was here
just
first.
Just clam up, Mushmouth, and give me an opportunity to broadcast with a thinly quality...
My employers made the arrangements for this parade that it was supposed to
here
be exclusive.
Here is probably a highlight of the parade now, the famous...
The famous bagpipe band of Sunapee,
New
Hampshire now is making its way...
Making its way...
Down the street.
Coming down the street here.
And it will turn, of course, following the ratified.
It will turn the left up above, following the parade route.
After that, the float will be
coming
along. If I see the first one, I think I see the first one now.
I think the coming into view now is the first float.
That's the second one. I see the second one.
The second one, of course.
And I see the third one.
And the third one.
And I can see four or five more that Heidi Skirbohorn can't see from his vantage point.
Five or six more coming along.
And another cheer goes up from the crowd, and that's
crowd,
about it.
You probably
here.
Heard was cheering just then at the first float.
It was a great cheering as the first float passed our broadcasting vantage point and made its way off by the town hall.
Then we pulled the network. It's glad to be
quiet. Here. Right on my microphone that time,
to,
I need.
Cover this.
And we're not
this
here. Come on, another network.
We might point out...
Ray, it's been our most colorful
right here,
day. Of course, it's led with the bees.
Remember, friends, whenever you want ice cream, be sure to ask for Leo's ice cream.
I think your commercials...
Leo puts good, heavy, rich cream.
You're leaking commercials on our network, Artie, and I can't stand any more of it.
Special is Cherry Jubilee.
And sold out.
Rich, rich vanilla.
So I hope you've been able to make out the broadcast of this colorful day.
And just about ready to conclude the broadcast.
Back to our main studio.
To our main studios.
In Portland.
In Augusta.
Well, thanks, Wally, and he was having a little interference with somebody.
Oh, Addie Skirmohorn really has...
I guess we should have mentioned that Artie left our employ as of the first of the year and went with the other network. And Wally may be running into trouble with him.
Well, what's in the mail today?
Here's a letter that says what happened to Wally Ballou reporting the February 8th parade yesterday up in New Hampshire. I had trouble hearing it.
Well, what happened, we don't want to belabor the subject, but Artie Skirmohorn was just, well, maybe 3 feet away from him, broadcasting for another network.
You think in a town that size, well, it's not a big town, but you think he would have been able to get another vantage point that wouldn't be picked up on my microphone.
Well, it's not a one-horse, marking village either, Wally.
I know that.
So,
plenty of room there for another
network.
Network.
If it
is the fiddly quality network.
Don't say that anymore.
Well,
we heard a big commercial for Leo's ice cream.
Yes, I thought he did that very well.
Well, it came on our microphone, too. And
oh, you heard it, too?
Oh, of course. And as a result, we discovered that Artie Skirmohorn is not only a terrific reporter, but a one whale of a salesman.
So we've hired him back, Wally, and he'll be working with you instead of against you on future public events.
That comes as good news.
Well, that's certainly... does relieve my mind a bit.
And, Wally, I think it wouldn't hurt you or your career to practice a little selling.
Uh-huh.
Kind of develop one of those salesman personalities. You know, any jokes or anything like that?
Well, I can't think of any offhand, but I can look some up.
Any humor or anything like that would help a salesman. Are you Hale fellow, well met?
Yes, and I make a good impression. I keep my shoes shined.
But you're a... 3 day with the same shirt, man, Wally, and I never before wanted to talk about it.
Doesn't go in selling.
But if you're going to start calling on some of these fastidious time buyers, then you'd better sharpen up, buddy.
Well, okay. You want me to sell them?
If you could.
Sponsors.
It would help, because Artie,
he's doing it.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Artie's working for us on a remote today, I think, isn't he?
I think he is right now, as a matter of fact. We got him right out on an assignment to City Hall.
talking to a lucky youngster down there. You may have read about this, you folks in this Bay Area. So if you're down there, Artie, come in, please.
Seated behind the mayor's desk here at City Hall is a youngster from Stephen Weems High School. His name is Edward Cruz, and his prize-winning composition on civic pride has won him the title of mayor for a day down here. It's all pretty exciting, isn't it, Ed?
Well, so far, not too much has happened. Just a lot of handshakes from these people around here.
Well, as far as you're concerned, Ed, the title of mayor is an honorary one.
Honorary my foot. I didn't break my back for 6 months on that composition just so I could sit behind this desk. I'm looking for a little action here.
Well, now, Ed, that's all very commendable, but you don't have the maturity, the know-how to run this big, huge office.
Hello, Captain? The newspapers call me again. They want action on Culver. Look, Captain, I don't care if you have to put 3,000 men on the case. I want Culver in the DA's office no later than 3 this afternoon. Now move.
Mr. Mayor, the governor is here to see you.
Take it easy, Irene, and send him in.
You want me to leave?
No, Ed? Sit right over there. We have nothing to hide.
Ed, we're in trouble. Real trouble. Lonergan called.
Al, sit down and take it easy. Drink a drink, Al.
Look, Ed, I don't think you understand. Say, who's that guy sitting over there?
Oh, he's a reporter.
A reporter? Ed, are you crazy? Why, if word got out,
Al!
This guy got the story?
Al, listen to me and listen good. We've got nothing to hide, have we?
But.
Al, listen to me. Lonergan can't touch you. I sent Woody to the State House this morning to get the record.
Ed, I don't like this. It's not the way to do it at all.
Al, baby, play ball with me on this. We can come out of it hurting if you don't.
All right, Ed. But it ain't to be the one to tell Joe Denker about it.
Well, we knew someone had to suffer, Al. Denker had to go. It was the only way we could.
Mr. Mayor, it's Joe Denker. He's out here and...
Al, Denker mustn't see you here. Take the back door.
Be careful with him, Ed.
I'll call you later.
Mr. Mayor, I couldn't stop him. He's on his way in.
It'll be all right, Irene.
Well, for this month, the big man himself.
Sit down, Joe, and let's talk this over.
Who's the guy sitting over there?
He's a reporter, Joe.
A reporter? Well, well. Say, Mr. Reporter, how would you like to hear a story, a sad one?
Joe, go home and get some rest.
Sad story.
You look tired.
Hear that, Mr. Reporter? Mr. Mayor wants me to go home and get the rest.
Joe, this isn't the place.
It's the rest, he said. Now, that's what I call funny, Mr. Reporter. You know why it's funny? Because Mr. Mayor and his boys just thought to it that I'll be getting all the rest I need, didn't you, Mr. Mayor?
Joe, I know you're unhappy.
Unhappy? But... You're crazy, Mr. Mayor. Glad to be leaving. It's the biggest break of my life to be able to get out of this black political ocean that covers and pollutes until a man loses his self-respect and they all go under. Unhappy, you say. Do you know what my eyes are going to be singing from today? Happy days are here again. And I didn't expect as much of you. Why do you do it?
It's the system that's rotten, Joe, not me.
And this is Artie Skirmahorn sending you back to the studio.
Great reporting, Arthur Skirmahorn, and a notable contribution on your first day back with
Boy,
the Robin Ray set.
Last time you had a good scoop like
Boy,
that.
Boy, hey, that was heartrending and dramatic.
Well, we'll read about Mr. Denker, I'm sure. He's going up for a long rest, as he says.
Yeah. I got to talk to Artie about that.
Yep.
It'll be good to be working a little again.
Big doings out there. In Squaw Valley, of course, was the Winter Olympics just about ready to start. I guess next week they get on the way, don't they?
The 18th, yeah. The 18th of this March. So Wally Ballou is out there, and I hope he's enjoying himself. Come in, then, from Squaw Valley, not too far from Lake Tahoe.
Make believe.
In Nevada, Squaw Valley in California. And I believe it's right. They were calling in Wally Ballou.
Transcribed Wally Ballou here at the Slalom Inn, ready to get a little bit of the color
of the background, so to speak, of the Winter Olympics. Just a moment. Someone is beckoning me, wants to give me a word. Just a moment, friends. Please hang on. The wind, I'm told, is augmented, and my engineer just reminded me of that fact. I'm glad you did, Ernie. Here at the Slalom Inn, evidently most of the guests are out skiing or enjoying the sports spectacle, the practicing, which of course is going on, but the manager is standing here in front of this warm, simulated fire, and I wonder if I could speak with you just a minute. You are the owner of the inn as well as the manager, aren't you?
That's right, Mr. Ballou. This is my inn that I opened 11 years ago here at the Squaw Valley. Well, I think I was probably one of the three or four original people who noticed how nature had turned or made this valley into a beautiful winter sports area.
Certainly was a good choice, and as much as now you're probably overrun with folks coming out here for the next week's event.
Well, it's very busy now, and I have no idea. I don't do any advertising of that is in a large scale. I have a few stickers that I have one of the boys put on car bumpers out in the parking lot, but beyond that, there's no organized advertising campaign, so I have no idea. That's word of mouth, of course.
How many people are staying here right at the present time?
Well,
I imagine you're filled to capacity.
Well, we are. We're all filled up, and I'm more than delighted, and I can't understand it. I do notice a good many, what I would call, foreign languages and accents. I don't understand that particularly.
Pretty natural, yes.
What do you mean?
Well, with the Olympics, I mean. Now, getting on to some of the other sidelights, do you have any of the stars?
Wait a minute. Go back. What do you mean Olympics? What's this?
Well, the Winter Olympics, which gets underway here in Squaw Valley next week. Probably the reason why you've got such a full house and so
Winter,
many people are speaking foreign languages. Because the world takes part in this.
Well, Winter Olympics? I've heard nothing about this. Nothing at all.
Well, I'm sure they're going to be held here. I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
Well, gee, that's
Has
funny.
Has anyone mentioned it to you, sir?
Not a word, but then I haven't been in town. I mean, I stay here, and I'm out in the kitchen most of the time.
Well, I guess you've just been fortunate without even knowing it. Kind of stumbled into something.
Well, this is very exciting. I did notice now, you know, that sign, what is that? It looks like they have all those rings are together and all. Looks like
That's the symbol of it, yes.
Oh,
I think maybe you can...
Well, that accounts for all those accents, doesn't it?
That's right, yes. There are people here from all over the world.
Well, I'll be hogtied.
Well, good luck anyway, and we hope to see you when we come back next week to cover the actual event.
I hope you will, Mr. Ballou, and won't you be my guest here now for a blast?
This is Radio Wally Ballou, standing in front of the simulated fire at Squaw Valley, returning you to the...
One of our old friends is in town, a gentleman that we haven't talked with for several months, pretty near a year, I guess. Prentice L. Wilson, ladies and gentlemen, who tips the scales at what? You put on a little weight, Prentice.
I have over the past year.
Excuse me.
I've put on almost 3/4 of an ounce, and it really shows.
Prentice stands 11 inches tall, and I wonder if somebody would help him up on the table here so that we can have a little...
Hi again, everybody. Bob, good to see you again. I've been listening to your program.
How do you like them, Prentice? I know...
I've been very
busy.
You've been
a fan of ours for some years.
Yes, I have, and I still have a lot of mail, Bob, at home that my wife and I like to read, commenting on my last appearance. So many people around the country could hardly believe that... A man my size could get about as well as I do and be as successful in the business world.
Mr. Wilson is engaged in manufacturing accessories for automobiles.
Rearview mirrors, Bob, and all sorts of chrome items that people put on their automobiles.
And despite his size, I will say for him, because he's quite modest, he does command a great deal of respect
from those
who work with him.
As I've said before, though, I think a person commands as much respect as he deserves.
You're a big man, Prentice L. Wilson, despite you.
Now, wait a minute.
Well, I didn't mean that.
Start making those snide-type remarks.
I didn't mean it that way. It slipped out, but sitting here as I am,
and
looking at you, it's difficult not to say something wrong from time to time.
As you know, Bob, I never come here to make a spectacle of myself, nor certainly
no, I know.
To be ridiculed.
I know, certainly, and...
I could spend my time a lot more profitably elsewhere, if that be the case.
I remember putting my foot in it last time you were here by calling attention to the cute little suits that you wear. And I know that that brought a flush of anger.
Well, you're doing it again just by recalling these things, Bob.
This is the type of thing I want to keep away from this time.
Please.
I believe you told us your wife makes those, doesn't she?
That's right. She makes these from swatches that she gets from my tailor. See, I can't go in and buy a suit off the rack, being only 1 inch tall.
You couldn't even go to the toddler's department, I don't think. You know what I mean. You really couldn't.
You want me to go along, I gather, right?
No, I don't.
Because I'll be pleased to. My chauffeur is downstairs.
I want you to stay, Prentice, believe me, and I know Ray would, too, if he were here. As I said, it's difficult to carry on a conversation with a man 11 inches tall without stepping on something from time to time.
You see, now there you are again.
I wasn't referring to you.
I'm sitting here comfortably on the edge of your ashtray, and you're going to insult me now, I suppose, as long as I remain here.
I don't want to insult you at all. That's let's change the subject altogether.
He's delighted.
Get off onto something else. Seen any good movies lately? Did you see Tom the Thumb?
Sky, I saw.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it very much.
Good.
Ben-Hur, I saw.
Oh, certainly a couple of good ones there.
Ben-Hur. I read that in one of the columns.
Yes. How about your preferences in food? I think the folks might be interested to learn just what...
I like a hero sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, Bob, excuse me, for a change of pace. And, I'm trying to think. Well, of course, I love
it. Well, a good man-sized steak is something...
What did you say then?
I said a steak is high.
Oh, you said man-sized steak.
Yes, I did.
Well, Bob, you're just trying to upset me.
No, please, really.
No, I'd rather stay longer, Bob, but it's just impossible for you...
Well, here comes Ray.
Not to be antagonized.
Ray's coming through the door now.
Attitude toward me.
Ray, I wonder if you could help out with Prentice here.
Hey, how are you, Tiny?
Hold on.
Oh, I'm getting out of here.
Ray, you've really angered him now. That isn't helping. That is any... I'm afraid
I didn't mean it.
Well, I don't know. He's always had a good sense of humor before, and...
He's a terrific tiny little guy. Terrific.
He doesn't like to be referred to as that.
No, I know he doesn't.
Doesn't like it.